Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is John Robinson, host of Silverbacks Radio, talking sports. Tonight, a couple of technical difficulties, but we made it to the air. We have a great program, and we're going to be discussing catching tonight. And we have some people lined up to have some questions. We have a couple of catchers on our Silverbacks teams. We have a former MLB White Sox catcher joining us at 7:30. It's going to be a great show. I just want to dive right into things that we wanted to discuss on the agenda, which include the show, PS4 Tournament. We're going to talk about U-Hit, and then we're going to get into our program, which is designed around the important position tonight on catcher. And we have a special guest coming on. Let's introduce. He's coming on at 7:30. It's going to be a lot of fun. And again, welcome back to Talkin' Sports with Silverbacks Nation. And I'm your host, John Robinson. I am joined by my management team tonight of John Volpe, Mike Van Riper, Doug Fidello, Eddie Bartoli. Pops will be on the call as well. And again, our special guest, John Daugherty. And we will have a former MLB White Sox joining us tonight. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to start out discussing the show. And this is a PlayStation 4 game. And we have two divisions, AL and NL. You know, we had a lot of interest in kids wanting to join. And unfortunately, what happened is we had a lot of kids that didn't even have PlayStation 4, or they didn't even have the show. So we decided to, give it a few more days. We had two divisions, and I'm in the AL, and I'm watching both divisions, and there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of smack talk. There's a lot of banter going back between the kids. Who is the best player? Well, here's how we're going to do this. At the end of each league, probably in a month, because we're going to be playing about 15 games in each league, AL, NL, we're going to have the champion, the winner of the World Series of the AL, use the AL All-Star team to play the winner of the NL using the NL All-Star team. We're going to find out who the best PS4, the show, Silverback player is, hopefully within 6 weeks. And then that person, that player, will win a prize. The prize will be made available shortly. And I have to tell you this. I'm better than I thought I was. Just so people know, there was a lot of skepticism around Coach John taking the team and playing against these kids who are all into video games these days. But listen, I've been playing video games since I was 5. Okay, I came up with the 8-bit Atari systems, the Nintendos, the Sega. You all know those systems out there. I grew up in those eras. You know, in my career, I actually developed and built some video games. So these kids don't know that. Right now, in the NL division, or the AL division, I'm going to talk about the AL because the NL division, they've been reluctant to send me their league stats, which we'll get to, and there'll be someone held accountable. But in the AL division, American League, we have at the number one position at a record of 7-2 of the Washington Nationals, and that team is played by, let me look at my stats, my own kid. So Johnny Baseball Robinson runs the Washington Nationals, and he's 7-2. And unfortunately, those two losses I caused him because I was signing in as his profile on another PlayStation, and I caused glitches in the game. And if you cancel your game while you're playing, you get the loss. Anyway, he's 7-2 in first place. We have the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves in the AL division. Now, you'll have national teams in the AL because it's PlayStation 4. And we just named the league AL. We named the other league NL because we anticipated a bunch of kids that wanted to play in each league. So this particular person, the Atlanta Braves, even though it's the AL division, they're 5-1, and the Atlanta Braves are run by Matt Caputo. Okay, so Matt Caputo is 5-1 in second place, followed by the third place team and probable World Series champion, the New York Mets at 5-2, run by yours truly, Coach John, to the surprise of most. Now, to be honest, I've seen some of the better players in the league, and I'm a little concerned about how I would compete with them in 3 or 5 series, but we'll deal with that in a couple of weeks. I plan to improve my game and get a little better. So in fourth place in our league, 4-1, the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are played by Cooper. And I got to tell you, I just played Cooper, and he beat me. And he was beating me pretty bad until the 9th inning where I made my comeback. And I'd like to think that I planned that out so that I can make it more interesting, but it wasn't really the case. I had to face Kershaw, in the game, and he was dominating me. And, you know, he got into the bullpen, and, you know, I came back on the bullpen. But anyway, in a three-game series or a five-game series, maybe I could do some damage against the Dodgers. But Coop is a very good player. John and Matt Caputo are very good players. In fifth place, we have the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Tampa Bay Rays, I'm looking, man, I don't even see that person on this. They must have picked a different team. I'm not really sure who runs the Tampa Bay Rays. Maybe I'll get a chat or I'll get a text to tell me who runs the Tampa Bay Rays on the in the AL division. Oakland Athletics is run by Matt Hirsch. That's a great job. The Oakland Athletics are 3-2. Los Angeles Angels are 2-2, run by Justin Parodi, good player. And then the rest goes on. We're going to keep it to the top five or six for this segment. National League has yet to give me their stats, even though I asked them several times. So when we get back to business, they're going to be running polls and polls and polls and polls. Okay, so a couple of things I wanted to address in the show is I really want kids to learn the game of baseball. And we have some kids who never played the show before or are new to it, as myself. And we have some kids who are excellent, and they've been playing for 6 months, and they played PlayStation 4 for years, and they know what they're doing. So the whole point of the whole show was for kids to learn. And, you know, we promised that, look, you know, we're going to look at who has the best team average, who has the best, you know, ERA, things like that, so kids can learn the game of baseball. And the way the game works, it's tremendous in terms of how people know which relays should take the cuts, things like that. The game really does a great job in situating the play. And, you know, I don't care who wins the leagues. You know, obviously I want to. And I want the kids to know that in order to beat the coach, you know, they have to work even harder. But the reality is these kids, you know, they're very good at the game. So now we're looking at average, you know, averages per team. So the number one team in the AL League, the Dodgers, and this is Cooper's team. He has an average of 433. So his team is hitting 433. That's tremendous. That's why he's winning a lot. And, you know, he's going to be in the mix, big contender to get into the World Series in the AL. The Nationals, Johnny Robinson, 392 batting average. The Athletics, Matt Hirsch, 322. We got the Braves with Caputo at 309, followed by the New York Mets, my team, at 298. I didn't break that 300 mark, which is significant. I'd like to do so. The Rays are at 282. They got the Yankees at 252, and then Justin Parodi's Angels at 237. Those are the top batting average, which means we're patient at the plate. We're taking pitchers. We're seeing the ball out of the pitcher's release. So I got to play, you know, 5-6 games already in the show. And what I realized is the view, the technology is very similar to a lot of the tracking and pitch recognition technology that we use. And, you know, U-Hit's out there. That's one we use. We love U-Hit. And we have kids who are competing for the U-Hit competition. And, you know, they use the same type of interface. So you have the pitcher view, you have the hand release, you have the way the ball translates from the hand to the plate. You can see the movement. You can see the change of speed. You could see all that stuff. To me, the most important aspect of that is the kids actually being aware of is a release point. And to look for it, right? That's the biggest thing, is look for the release point. And what I've noticed is the kids who are developing and winning in this show are also achieving a little more in reality. And it's because they're understanding that look for the release point, understand where the plane of the ball is, and understand that there's a spin, there's movement to it, and then you have an approach. And everything in life is about having an approach. And we talked about this last week. We talked to Volpe extensively about an approach at the plate. We talked to many people, pitchers, catches and all this stuff, but your approach defensively and offensively, and it's all the same thing. You got to think about it during a week, and you got to develop that approach. And what I like about this show is it actually is developing a kid's approach to the plate. And, you know, I'm seeing it myself, and I'm seeing the kids I'm playing and how they respond in reality, and it holds true. These kids who are in the top five, top 10 are very successful on the field. And it's because, one, they love the game enough to compete. They love the game enough to play games in baseball. They're not playing Call of Duty that much or Fortnite that much. They're playing baseball. And it's a testament to them. They're working hard. So we developed these two leagues with an effort of improving our kids' gameplay. And, you know, things like You Hit and things like the show are teaching our kids, you know, not only are they developing an awareness of the game, but they're developing their approach. And I'm very proud of them for doing this work while we can't work in person. It's very difficult to do things at home, and I'm proud of these kids who are doing the extra things that it takes to become a great player. You know, you can play sports for many reasons. We play sports. You know, I played sports. You know, I hated losing. I loved competition. I hated losing, and you know, I played sports because, you know, if I lost, I needed to get back and play. And I lost again. I need to get back and play even more. And the more I lost, the more I had to play harder and practice harder. And then ultimately, you know, winning becomes addictive and winning becomes contagious. And then next thing you know, you expect to win and you make the people around you better and you win and win and win. And, you know, next thing you know, you have a culture of winning. And, you know, that's what we expect, you know, from these kids, is to expect to be good, expect to be great. Some more stats from our league. Let's look at home runs. So home runs, we have the Dodgers here. We have Cooper has hit 39 home runs in the league already, followed by John, who hit 28 home runs, followed by the Mets, which is my team, which hit 15 home runs, and then the Braves, Caputo, 13. In the Athletics, they have 11 home runs. So, again, it stays true. The guys who have the better batting averages seem to be connecting with the ball better. I'm going to hear about some of the U-Hit stats coming up, and let's see if it translates into the show. So I know Mike Van Riper has joined us tonight, and he's been directing the U-Hit program, and we have the relationships with U-Hit. We're going to expand them in the future. And we love their technology. It teaches the kids to really prepare right at the batter's box. We've been doing this for 2 months in our facility, and we're hoping that a lot of the kids are downloading the app on their phone and they're participating in the competition. So, you know, Mike, if you're there, and I know you are, can you give us the rundown on the latest rankings for the U-Hit? I may have to unmute your phone. Give me a second. Okay, everyone, your phones are unmuted. I apologize for the delay. But Mike Van Riper, if you're there, take it away.
All right, thanks, Sean. Unfortunately, what I'm going to look to do this week, and I'm working on with the U-Hit guys, is to resend some invites out to the guys. We haven't had as many in between last week and this week sign up and get in there. And I think to your point, and one thing that I did this week on my own with my son was look at U-Hit in conjunction with the show. And one thing that my son gave me feedback on as we were playing was, hey, Dad, you know, this is just like U-Hit. You need to, you know, look for the release point, just like you said, and pick it up. So I think one thing that U-Hit focuses on is just really the mental aspect of, in terms of brain connection, in terms of you picking it up, what your eyes see to where your hands go, right? So even though you don't think that it's going to translate into the box when you physically get back out there, It does. And one step to see is in between your games with the show, You Hit is a good way to kind of keep that active. So we're going to resend that out, make sure everybody else has gotten it. I'm going to work with the guys out there to get a new invite out for everyone, so we can give some new rankings next week. And I will be doing that within the next 2 days. Everybody will see that. On the show rankings and standings, I would say, Coach Robinson, you're probably right in line with the Mets average there. Perotti, I'm really disappointed. You got Mike Trout on your team, and that's kind of very disappointing to be at 238. So I hope to see something new in the coming week. Ohtani should be pretty much carrying you as well. So let's go, Justin. But yeah, really that's it. I need more participation there. The standings will change once we have more people that are involved. So look for a new invite, and I'd like to see a few more guys get out there and take part in the U Hit over the next 7 days so I can give some new standings next week.
Mike, that's great. Thank you. And can you just give us a few minutes of your time to talk about what we're trying to accomplish here between the show, the U Hit stuff, some of the videos that we're going to be posting, and maybe, and it's just speculation, and I hope all of our listeners understand this, that, you know, if it was up to us, you know, we would already be playing games and tournaments right now, but we can't. And, you know, we're trying to get out of our own cages. We're pacing back and forth, ready to compete, and we can't. And we understand why we can't, but again, we're all human. We can't wait to get outside. And, you know, May 15th is coming, and allegedly it's the time where the universe opens up to us to do stuff. Give us some hope.
Yeah, so what we're looking – I mean, listen, I'm not inside the state offices or anything like that, but really what we're trying to provide right now through whether it be You Hit, the show – videos where we're trying to get you guys something that's accessible to work on from week to week. It's really about a bridge, right? And John, you just described it really well. Like, you know, the vision is like a panther, right? Pacing in the cage to be released. And I think that's kind of what it's about. Like, every single day you guys should have a routine, between school, getting outside and working on something baseball oriented, right? Especially, you know, weather, you know, especially with the weather getting a little bit nicer now, you know, getting out there and, you know, hitting off a tee, getting out there and doing something with a wall and, you know, and wall ball, having a catch with someone, for you, for those of you that are pitchers, staying strong, right? Having a good routine every few days to throw a 20 pitch bullpen session, 30 pitches, build up your strength. Do not lose it. I spoke to a doctor this week about the importance, and I'm sure Darty can provide some insight on this too. The importance of not, you know, letting your muscles rest. You know, making sure that you are active, making sure that you are, it's going to take you that much longer to ramp up once we get out there if you are not working right now. So whether it's conditioning, whether it's, you know, low weight training, squats, you know, sprints, whatever you're doing is going to pay off. Those of you that are not doing anything, and again, everything goes together, right? So the show is something, yes, it's entertaining. It also is going to work, you know, if you look at the bottom left, the game is great. It does show you a lot, talks about your approach, talks about when you're picking up the ball, tells you when you're early, tells you when you're late, tells you if you roll over. Again, those are all things that we talk about when it comes to approach. But we really need you guys to continue to work. The goal is, right, so the way things have been working in New York State is a few, let's say, usually 10 to 14 days ahead of the actual new date, we get some new news. We're hoping that by the end of next week, we get a little bit of insight into terms of what the 15th will look like and where things are headed. The numbers continue to come down. I'm sure everyone on this call is hopeful, yet realistic. So we really want to make sure that once we get back out there, we will communicate everything we're going to do, what kind of safety precautions we're going to take. I'm sure some will be dictated by the state in terms of what's expected, in terms of numbers, how many players we can have, how many, you know, what that looks like. We're going to try to do as pretty much everything outside because that's where we should be now. The weather is nice enough. And, you know, really it's about staying positive in what you're doing at home, staying on pace for when we are ready to go. And then once we get some good news, we will share it. I'm sure everyone will have a little bit of an inkling as soon as we know, and as soon as the rain, you know, the shackles are taken off, we can get back out there. We're going to communicate quickly. We're going to let everybody know what we're going to do. And, you know, we really want to get the kids practicing, but we will be safe. That's the number one thing. We will be safe in everything that we are looking to do moving forward, because it will be, you know, this next 6 to 12 months are going to be really, really interesting and really challenging for the entire planet. So we will be working with we're going to be just following what we need to do and making sure that we're taking the precautions necessary. So thanks, Coach, for letting me speak on that.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. And this just in, I got the standings for the show national side. And let me just go through.
There we go.
The top four, the league, the National League got a little late jump because there was a few kids who were downloading the game. And it takes a couple of days to do that, believe it or not. We had some internet issues in the area, all understandable. So the number one team so far in this league is the New York Yankees, and that is run by Drew 12U, and Drew is the nephew of Dave Fleming, and we all know
there
Dave Fleming from the Mariners, and his kid is a true baseball player, understands the game, he's a phenomenal catcher. And he's at our 12U level, and it's going to be very exciting to watch him play. And he gets the game, and he's 4-0 in the NL side on the show. So very impressive. And following him are the Chicago Cubs. And believe it or not, we have a gentleman on the phone later whose grandfather played for the Cubs when they won the World Series and was the last Cub to play in a World Series, which is amazing. And the Chicago Cubs are run by, let me see in my list here. The Cubs is Eddie Bartoli, our 15U pitcher, lefty pitcher, is running the Chicago Cubs. He's 2-0. The Los Angeles Dodgers are 2-0. Everyone likes to take these Dodgers. I guess the pitching's fantastic. The Dodgers in the NL League are run by Ryan D'Ambrosio, another 12U kid, very good player.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, doing very well. And the Houston Astros are in fourth, and the Houston Astros are run by Kevin Heffernan. Kevin's a player, Mike. Kevin was, believe it or not, the first kid the Silverbacks ever recruited and signed. Him and his friend Nate Wolf, both of them were the first two kids we ever really signed, aside from Johnny, my kid, and this kid Connor Dorso, who was the two kids we started the Silverbacks baseball program on back in 2017 when we opened up.
Love
our
looking
tryout.
At those old pictures are awesome.
Oh, you look at the memories, especially Facebook gives you the memories. You start to see things and you remember how things began. Our first tryout, Kevin and Nate showed up, and we're like, oh, these kids, we want them. And so Kevin has a special place in my heart. He has a special place in the Silverbacks, and he's in fourth place. I could see him winning that league. He's going to be a tough competitor. And maybe I'll get a chance to play against him. We'll see. Because, you know, I'm going to get better myself, Mike. I'll be honest with you. I'm hitting a lot of home runs in this game.
Listen, it, it's just like anything. It takes reps for sure.
It takes a lot of reps. And when you're dealing with video games, the hardest part is understanding how the controllers work, you know? So you end up hitting a triple, but you get a double because you sent the runners back because you pressed the wrong button, right? So
yep.
A lot of it is the experience of the motor skills, right, and understanding what your eyes are seeing and what you should be pressing. So years ago when I was on the Nintendo and Sega, you know, I could do things back then that were incredible. And today, you know, you can't. And you can't compete with the kids who are playing this stuff. But forget about the actual playing of the video game. They're learning baseball because the games have evolved so much. The graphics, the way that people move. It's so much realistic that the kids understand the game a lot better if they're playing it versus some of the other video games they're playing. How do you feel about the Fortnite stuff?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, you know what, I mean, that stuff, I mean, like, of course, we love to see the kids. I mean, I feel better when I walk in a room and see that, you know, see baseball being played in terms of on a video game, because I think it's educating them on situations and everything we just spoke about. You know, the other stuff, again, there's strategy involved and all that, you know. But I think, let's be very clear, like, at the end of the day, we need to make sure, and the kids and parents need to make sure that there's a balance, right? There's a balance between time on the video game, time, you know, obviously schoolwork right now with, you know, remote distance learning happening. Obviously that takes precedence. And then in the afternoon, it's a balance. It's about, it's making sure you're getting outside whenever that weather is good enough. Working, you know, versus being really tugged towards a video game. So do not let yourself slip right now, because it's going to be very, very evident. And this is a time where guys can pass guys when it comes to skill, no matter whether you're, you know, you're 10 years old or you're 16 years old and ready to get some looks. So make sure you stay on track and you stay balanced.
Thanks, Mike. And it's very important to do that. It's very important to, as we spoke about many times, to keep yourself in shape, even if things are very challenging in your life. I mean, you got to understand what your priorities are. You know, some kids, it's schoolwork, it's athletics, or if you're a little older, it's family, schoolwork, athletics. It's very important to understand how you have to train yourself to get to where you want to be. And that's what we're about at Silverbacks, is teaching kids how to handle themselves. The next segment of our show, Mike, I want to talk about catching, the importance of catching. I'll lead off with a little bit of a
yep.
little story of you know, my college experience with one of my catchers. He's actually in Somers, and I ran into him a few times recently, Tommy Deegan, and he does a lot of football stuff in the town. This kid was a phenomenal catcher. And the best story I have, and, you know, we're going to get into our guest speaker. We're going to get into John Daugherty is on the line as well, but I just want to segue in. Catch it to me. You know, and I was a pitcher, and everyone thinks, oh, the pitcher, the most important piece or the most focal point. I never thought that. I always thought the catcher was the captain of the team, and the catcher made the team. And my entire career through college and beyond, and, you know, I always thought, you know, I was making it to the professional level, and I had catchers who played pro, and thinking, okay, I'm going to go in there, and we had the same vibe, and I understood that the relationship between a pitcher and catcher is one of the most important relationships on the field. But the catcher is dictating. The catcher knows a lot of things that the pitcher doesn't. And one story I have, I was pitching in college, and I was pretty good, striking out a lot of guys, all that stuff. And remember one game, my catcher called for some pitch, and I shook him off. And I threw the pitch I wanted. And the kid hit the ball back at my head. I actually ducked and fell on the ground. And as I'm up, dusting myself off, here comes my catcher, Tommy, walking to me. And if you're a catcher out there, you'll understand the next statement. He kept the face mask on, didn't lift it up. And he said to me, "Don't shake me off." And he walked back. And that was it. I went on to pitch a fantastic game in sync with the catcher, the whole program. And my whole career in college, I had a tendency to throw what the catcher wanted. And you understand that if you're dealing with a good catcher, they have an awareness of the game. They're a student of the game. That's why they make the best MLB coaches, because they're looking at the game as a whole, not as an isolated incident. And they're watching a lot of different things that dictate what the probability of success is. And I learned that lesson early in college, and it helped me out tremendously. And I'll always thank Tommy Deegan for that, because he made me see things from a different level. It wasn't about me being a great pitcher. It was about me allowing other people on the field to also contribute and be great at what they do. That made me even be better. So, you know, I'm not sure how much experience, Mike, you know, you've had with catchers in your day. Can you relate to that story? What do you think about that?
No, there's no doubt about it that I've always viewed the catcher as the captain. I mean, we always look to one thing that we always have encouraged every single catcher in our organization is those are the guys that are communicating, right? They're communicating where we're at, you know, whether it's the number of outs, whether it's obviously they're communicating with their pitcher. They need to be the most vocal on the field. And really, I think I've always looked for them to be the most vocal off the field. And I would say that in my experience, all the way, you know, for my game day experience, every single one of my catchers was also the I don't want to say the class clown, but they also were able to make it light, make it serious, and balance that. And I know with my interactions with Coach Scoob, he's that guy also.
That's great, Mike, and thank you. And tonight we have a very, very special guest who I had a chance to meet a few weeks ago. And this gentleman played 5-6 years in the major leagues. Matt Marullo, thank you for joining us tonight. And if you're there, please say hi to us.
Oh, I'm here. Yeah, I've been listening. Can you guys hear me okay if you're on speaker, or you want me to turn it off?
Oh, we can hear you fine. I appreciate you joining us tonight. Thank you. Man, we have a bunch of kids on our system that are going to be asking some questions tonight. They know who you are. They follow you before. These kids know stats. And, you know, my dad's on the line as well. Pops, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, Coach.
So Matt.
How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Matt, my dad was a Cubs fan growing up. You know, and your grandfather was the last Cub to play in the World Series. Can you tell us a little bit about your family history and your experience growing up in that type of environment?
Well, my grandfather was very young when I was born. He was only 47 years old. So he could play with me when I was a youngster. The times I got to see him, he was scouting. But he would bring me around during school vacation to during the summertime to try out camps, spend time with him, watch games.
The phone's dying.
He was very influential. You know, the winter time was around Christmas. We'd be in his basement just talking baseball, whether it's, you know, how to swing a bat or how to put your stirrup socks on the right way so they don't fall down. You know, every little thing, I was shown so much by him. And you know, really, if it wasn't for him being a scout and looking at me, and, you know, he saw at the age of 12, my last year of Little League, I had my birthday that summer, and he gave me a catcher's mitt. And it was the first time I ever had a catcher's mitt that wasn't from the bottom of the bag, from the old Little League equipment bag. And that was his nice way of saying your arm's not strong enough to pitch and you don't have the speed to play shortstop anymore. But I hit left-handed, and he knew I liked it back there. And, you know, he was dead on, so I just became a student of all the catchers, you know, right from about 13, 14 years old. And, you know, you guys hit the nail on the head talking about, you know, I think of the old the guys out there that I followed when I was a youngster. They were the leaders of the team. They set the tempo for the game. They had a presence. You know, their body language and mannerisms, you know, they go a long way. And it's not always just being vocal, but it's really your actions, your mannerisms, the bounce in your step. You can tell when a catcher's dragging or his mind's on his hitting. And you can also tell when he's just blocking balls when nobody's on base. And he's just into it every single pitch, and he's very supportive of the pitcher regardless of that guy's personality. That's a different thing. They're all different personalities, you know. So you got to be a people person as well. But, you know, very lucky to grow up with my grandfather steering me in that direction, and also knew how to keep it light, too, like you said.
Well, Matt, you left out the most important part of your grandfather. You know, when you're in Chicago, you're either a Cub fan or a White Sox, right? You can't be both. But I love the Cubbies, and that's another story for another time. But you left out a good notation on your grandfather that he was known to have the quickest throwing arm in baseball. Can you give us a little bit on that?
You know, you're right. As I got older, you know, I realized he had one of the few arms that you would grade, well, probably a 70, if not, you know, it was a top arm, you know, so he was known for having a tremendous arm strength. I never got it, unfortunately. But
you got his looks instead, right?
Yeah. I remember pitching a game in Little League. I was about 11. I threw a shutout, and he was at the game. I was thrilled. I was so happy. And, you know, after lunch, he said, "Let's go out in the backyard. We got to work on your throwing." I was like, "What are you talking about? I just pitched a shutout." He says, "Oh, you're a long armer. You swing the ball. We got to shorten you up a little bit." So, he was a big help. But he had a cannon arm. I thought you were going to bring up the errors. He still holds.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that.
Well,
You had a nice couple of years too in Major League Baseball. I was looking at your stats, not bad. And you played with the likes of Carlton Fisk, Ozzie Guillen, Ron Kittle, to name a few, Sammy Sosa, Robin Ventura.
Yeah.
My God. What was it like? I mean, not saying that you weren't up there with them, but what was it like to walk on the field with these guys around you? It had to be unbelievable.
Oh, it was like a Forrest Gump experience. All kinds of people. I started off going to college and find myself behind a young B.J. Surhoff from Rye, New York.
Wow, yeah.
I was an alternate invited to join Team USA in 1985. I found myself backing up a young guy named Joe Girardi. I get drafted, and Carlton was there, 37 years old, and you know, I'm backing him up at the age of 23. I found, and next thing you know, I get traded to Cleveland, and I find myself I'm playing alongside Tony Pena. I mean, these guys were just tremendous talents, and you know, real competitors. You know, it was something. And you know, Jeff Torborg, you mentioned, you know, coaches and managers being catchers. He was a big help, and I could swing the bat. That was my gift. That wasn't anything special behind the plate. So I had to learn how to do a lot of fundamental things to, you know, to get the job done at the major league level. And Torborg really helped me a lot with just relaxing back there and giving me some confidence and, you know, helping me, you know, the toughest thing is you want to tighten up when you got hard throwers, or you don't quite know where the ball's going to be, or you get a backup slider or a sinker that rides, and tough things, just trying to relax.
Yeah, it's got to be a great feeling, though. It really does.
Matt, thank you very much for that explanation, Matt. And I heard they made the movie Major League after that era with the Cleveland Indians that you may have been participating. I'm only kidding. One of our catchers on our 16U team has a question for you. Joey Confalone is with us tonight. And let me tell you about this kid. When he came up at 14 years old, we had a lot of high expectations for him. And, he sputtered out a little bit, but he worked his butt off. And the way catchers work is quite different than some of the other athletes. And, Matt, I'm sure you can articulate that a little bit better in a few minutes, but I'm going to let Joey ask a question to you directly about now. Joey, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here, Coach.
Okay.
Hi, Matt. So I'm one of those kids that I grew up knowing all the greats, Johnny Bench, Thurman Munson, Bill Dickey, and the one thing my dad would always say is, be the wall. And sometimes, Coach, you could probably agree to this. You could hear him from the stands saying, be the wall. So I'm very enthusiastic. I'm very loud, but which comes from that is that I talk a lot, which means like I talk to my team. I say how many outs there are, hey, outfield turn two, all that stuff. But this past couple of seasons, I've actually been getting repercussions from that, saying like my teammates saying like, hey, you're talking too much, or I know what I'm doing, shut up. So like, what can you like what do you think is talking too much or talking too little?
Well, somebody mentioned balance. There's a lot of things. I think the most important part is body language, you want to keep your players upbeat and you want to keep them prepared for the next pitch, and there's a fine line between taking charge and being vocal. Sometimes I was a little bit too quiet. And I didn't quite know what that meant. I would say it's more about your body energy than what's coming out of your mouth all the time, And it's just kind of having a feel for, connecting with everybody else on the ball club, and not being rah-rah, for too much of the rah-rah, if you know what I'm trying to say. You don't want to be Captain. You don't want to be Captain Obvious out there. And it's really just picking up a kid who made an error. At second base, or the pitcher really needed, that double play ball, but the ball bounced in the dirt, and the first baseman couldn't come up with it. And you see your pitcher, drop his head and pound his fist. That's where you just say, hey, come on, let's go. But it doesn't always have to be where everybody can hear it. Just the pitcher, maybe just that player, find little ways to, make it doesn't always have to be such a big production, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Thank you. Yes, it very does. Thank you so much.
Good. Very good. Very good question.
Joey, this is Pops. I miss your voice.
I miss you too, Pops. My dad's over here saying he misses you too, don't
Well, thank you, Joey. Joey, that's an excellent question. And Matt, thank you for the explanation. I always wondered about that in terms of how you handle at a professional level the professional teammates around you. And I'm sure there's a lot of sensitivities. I have another kid, another catcher, a 14U catcher, on the line with another question. Joey Dwyer, are you there? Ask Matt your question.
Hello.
Hello, Joey.
Hi, thanks for talking to me tonight. How would you watch pitches and watch how the batter's reacting to the pitches? Like, is he opening his hip or dropping his shoulder and know what to call next?
The best thing to do is you look at his feet and you see where he gets set up in the box. And you're looking at both feet. And then you want to try to find out where he steps. If he takes the pitch, or even if he fouls one off, but you want to see where, that front footprint, where that went. That'll tell you a lot. You'll get a sense of timing as well, whether he's late. But you can't – it's really just something that you get a sense of out of the corner of your eye without really looking for it. But the biggest thing is you know, we always said you get a good catcher is always checking the hitter's feet.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And they're also right down there at eye level for you.
So, Matt, let me ask you a question. Thank you, Joey,
sure.
for your question. Both Joeys. So, Matt, from in a professional at a professional level, a lot of the a lot of these major league hitters, they're so fine tuned in their mechanics. What are you looking for that edge for the pitcher? What is it? Is it hot cold zones? Is it reports that you get from data analytics? What's the competitive advantage that you can bring into the game?
I think one of the things that's happened a lot, it's been going on for years. It's a little bit of a lost art, and it's understandably so. But catchers don't really read the emotions of hitters in between pitches because they've got their head in the dugout waiting for the next sign from the coach or direction from the coach. Quick story. There was a fellow who made it to the majors with Pittsburgh, who was drafted pretty high out of Boston College. When I was scouting and we had him high on our list and everybody'd seen him, and I remember my scouting director telling me, go back one more time as a former catcher and see what you think about his ability to call a game. I said, Tommy, there's no point because he's waiting for 30 seconds for the coach to go through, you know, a binder to figure out the next sign, and nobody's told him to really look at the pitcher. So, I mean, look at the hitter. And you can tell when a guy's anxious. You can tell when a guy's a little bit when he's not aggressive. You can tell when he's mad at himself. You can tell when he's on things. So, again, it's just trying to, you know, everybody's out in front of you. You got your fielders out in front of you. You can see who's ready. You can see who's not ready in earned position. You can keep an eye on your pitcher. But the biggest thing is after each pitch is, you know, you're trying to read the basically the reactions of the hitter. And his emotions have a lot to do with those reactions. You can tell when a guy's trying too hard, good time to call a changeup. And there's no sense just because you have two strikes do you have to call a breaking ball, because he may be just fouling fastballs off, and it takes you six fastballs to get the guy out. But don't do him any favors throwing him anything off speed where he gets the head of the bat out. He's been fouling balls off the first base dugout the whole time. There's no need to change anything. You just do him a favor if you speed up his bat. So it's, you know, the other thing is don't worry about the hitter so much as worry about what your pitcher's got going good that day. And the best hitters are still going to get beat by, you know, good pitches in the right spot.
Hey, Matt, John Daugherty here, buddy. How you doing? Thanks again for coming on with
us
tonight. I really
great.
Appreciate it. This
Thanks
is all great
me.
Stuff. And this is, you know, don't be silly. And this is the kind of stuff where, you know, that it's great for all these kids to hear and you know, to see. And I agree with John was saying earlier, like catchers were my best friends. You know, my catcher in high school was at my wedding. My catcher in college was at my wedding. He was actually at my wedding party. I was always very close with my catcher.
Yeah, go ahead.
mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, your catchers do take care of you. And all that stuff that you're saying is great. You know, during his downtime, spending so much time at home, I've been looking at old videos and paper clippings. Just trying to clean the house, basically, and stay busy. And it's so funny when you say that the emotion, like when you're watching these different guys where a pitch looks like, you know, just got the corner, never, you know, you were a hitter too, so I got to be careful how I say it. But, you know, they're always complaining about the strike zone, whatever the case is. And it's so funny too, like sometimes the guys, their emotions get in their way 100%. I know with the first question about, you know, being too rah-rah, and, you know, Mickey Tettleton was a catcher that I had, and you can't get any more stoic than Mickey Tettleton.
Right.
I mean, if you're in a house fire, Mickey Tettleton, he's going to be walking. He'll be the last one out of the house and have a cigarette in his hand, you know, taking his time walking out. I mean, he's just as laid back as it gets. And
well, I think
talk about leading
you know,
by example,
point.
He was just an intimidating guy.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's being steady. You know, back to Joey's question, which was great. You don't want to be overreacting to anything. The main thing is like, hey, we got this. We're okay. It's only the fifth inning, or it's only the third inning, you know. And it's being a rock in a lot of ways, exuding some confidence that, you know, we got this. We'll be all right.
And,
yeah, like you said, you don't want to be over like a, cheerleader. But there are times where you got to fire that ball back to the catcher, back to the pitcher, and wake him up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I always I always thought, you know, from talking to catchers over the years, and I'm not going to lie, when I was a little bit younger at times, you know, somebody needed to come out, maybe coddle me a little bit. And then at other times, you know, somebody maybe needed to come in and, you know, fire that ball back at me and wake my butt up because I was, you know, going through emotions and whatnot. So, you know, catchers are, like I said, so important, you know, to get to see the whole entire field. And, you know, I know personally, you know, I use Mickey Tettleton. I mentioned his name before. Some of my best games were to Mickey Tettleton. But Mickey, to me, was more of, you know, Mickey Tettleton was more known as a hitter than he was as a, you know, as a catcher. And, you know, last thing you hate to you see sometimes, you know, even as an outfielder, sometimes I'm pitching. I look out in the outfield to see where my guy's in position, and I see my right fielder going through his hitting motion. I'm like, I hope the ball hit the right field because he ain't worried about that at all right now. So, you know, I was very fortunate to have some young catchers, you know, Chad Kruder, Rich Rowland, John Flaherty, loved throwing to these guys because they were so into the game. And not that they didn't care about the hitting, but I think they knew their job catching was, you know, just as important, if not as important. And they were phenomenal throw to them. They framed the ball. They moved in. They moved out. They up, down. They were really into the game. Those are the kind of guys that you really enjoy throwing to. And again, when the signs are going down, you're not even thinking. You know, sign goes down, you take a deep, you throw the ball. I mean, if I shook a guy off 2-3 times in a game, you know, then I knew I was having some problems. You just basically, you know, you got synced in and you just let it rip.
Yeah. Well, I had a wake-up call in AA. I got called up to the majors basically to be a left-handed bat and a backup catcher. And I was learning the fundamental skills of catching and throwing at that level. But I got sent back down after Carlton Fisk came back from an injury, and I was still only 23. And there was a young pitching coach there named Rick Peterson, who eventually went to the Oakland A's and New York Mets and all that stuff. Very cerebral guy. He asked me one day, he says, so do you even know how to figure out an ERA? And I said, no. He said, it would be good if you started caring about what those guys care about. You know, it might help you in the long run too. And, you know, it really woke me up to, you know, cause it's one thing, you know, I can still think of the relationships I had in high school and with pitchers and, you know, it was never like I'm saying a total selfish ball player, but when you're in the minors and you're fighting to get to the big leagues, you know how it is. You're trying, you know, you're into your own game a lot. And, boy, I found myself, even though I was a backup catcher and primarily, you know, left-hand hitter, there were guys that just, whether it was Kevin Tapany or, you know, Kirk McCaskill, even Jack McDowell, you know, Scott Erickson, guys like that, they were like, hey, you catching today? I want you back there, you know. And that always made me feel good, you know. And that's always one thing my grandfather said, you're always in the game. It's a cliche, but – you know, you can go 0-for-4 and still have a big impact on that game. And you don't have to throw anybody out. And, you know, it's not always just about blocking balls. But, you know, like you said, Johnny, the pitcher knows when you're there for him. And it's a great relationship.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, you know, again, another quick story. I know when I first came up, you know, I was in the spring training, you know, as a double-A pitcher. I wound up having a ridiculous spring training and skipping AAA and going to the major leagues. And so in spring training, I was pitching because I was a relief pitcher in the minor leagues. They converted me to a closer. So I was, you know, they were grooming me to be a setup man for Henneman. And so a lot of my spring training innings were late in the game. So I was facing all of the young, I was pitching all of the younger catchers. So I really never pitched to Mickey Tettleton at all because Mickey, you know, veteran guy, you know, they always play the first 2-3 innings, get Kubo a couple of bats, and they get him out of there, let him go play golf. So now the season's starting, and I got to face Mickey Tettleton, and he really hasn't faced me. And he's calling slider after slider after slider, and, you know, and I'm a sinker ball pitcher, and I'm throwing it because I'm scared to death to shake off Mickey Tettleton. And, you know, Sparky Anderson comes running in screaming at me after, like, the third game. What the hell are you doing? What are you throwing? And, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, then I had a conversation with the pitcher coach. I said, listen, you talk to Mickey, and I'll make sure I talk to the other guy who's the same age as me. And then, you know, we'll go from there. And then everything, you know, then obviously I got to know Mickey a little bit better. We got to talk a little bit more, and he understood what kind of a pitcher I was. And, you know, like I said, then it was, you know, we were great together. But, that relationship is very, very important. You've heard the stories of, you know, the Randy Johnson throwing to Johnny Flaherty, and over the years, these different guys, I know the Mets, you hear it in the paper, they're personal catchers, so to speak. I mean, you know, you really don't want that to be the case because it could disrupt the whole team in a lot of different ways. But, you know, that does take place.
Yeah, yeah. The, you know, another kind of a interesting story. One of my better advice on catching came from a pitcher, and that was Charlie Huff when he came over to the White Sox, and he showed up with about 5 knuckleball mitts for all the guys in spring training. And he said, "Don't give me a target. You have to be as loose and relaxed as possible back there." And we had a guy, great defensive catcher named Ron Karkovice, and the manager said, you catch Charlie, you need to get ready for Charlie for the season. You're going to be his everyday guy. And and then Charlie would pitch in B games in spring training to a Triple-A catcher, a guy named Don Wakamatsu, became major league manager, major league coach now. Wak was a great defensive guy, really soft hand. So the whole season went by. All I did was play catch with Charlie once in a while in the outfield. But I never caught him. And sure enough, found ourselves late in the season in Toronto, and some nasty right-handed pitcher like Mel Stottlemyre Jr. is pitching, and I find myself catching Charlie Huff, and for the first time in a game, and you know, it was nerve-wracking, but nothing got by me. Nobody stole a base. We won the game 3-1, and it was one of my more mentally exhausting games catching. Just trying to stay, again, as loose as possible so that I could react quickly to the last-minute movement. But it was
that was my next question. So I'm going to assume, was he your toughest guy ever catching? And if not, who was? But if he was, so be it. But then who was someone that you enjoyed catching that was easy to catch? I remember Chad Kruder used to say, you know, catching Nolan Ryan, says it was like, as hard as he threw, it's like just coming in, like catching it like a ball hitting a pillow. It was just so soft, which is kind of crazy. As opposed to a guy like a Kevin Brown who threw 96 and ball just, you know, coming in like a bowling ball. Sinking all over the place.
Right. Yeah. No. To answer your question, the toughest guy to catch was Roberto Hernandez. He wound up being a closer for like 20 years, and you know, I caught him in the minors, and I caught him in his early years in the major leagues, and he threw bowling balls. He threw hard, and it was one of those fastballs that went 3 different directions, and it didn't matter what the grip was. And he had a split finger, too, that could go 6 feet, you know, in the air. It could go right in the dirt, and it was, you know, he was nasty. And one of those guys was tough to repeat his delivery. But the easy guys and the fun guys were, you know, Jack McDowell, that had basically 2 pitches. He had 2 different fastballs and a split finger, and he threw the split at 2 different speeds depending on the count, and just a real gamer, just not afraid of contact, you know, not afraid to just make guys swing the bat. And the same thing with, you know, with the White Sox was Kirk McCaskill. There were days where, you know, the old, you could catch him just sitting on a stool. You know, he just put it right there on the mitt, all 4 pitches that he had. And, you know, it's pretty amazing.
That's incredible. John Daugherty, thank you for that segue. We have a Silverbacks, our catching director, Anthony Fava. He's coaching at Iona. He's amazing catcher, amazing with the kids. And I'd like to introduce him now. And Anthony, if you can give us a quick synopsis of your college career and tell us what you've been doing with the kids and segue into talking to Matt and John about some catching. Thank you.
First off, hello, everybody. How's it going? Those of you who don't know me, Anthony Fava, quick background, local guy, Lakeland High School, went on to play at St. John's University in Queens. Played there for 2 years before having a career-ending shoulder injury, and now I'm fortunate enough to be able to work with the Silverbacks, and I have recently taken a assistant coaching position at Iona College.
That's great.
Thank you. Been listening in for the past half hour. All really awesome pointers, and a lot of different things that, you know, I've been able to speak with about with tons of different guys, whether it's in the organization or not. A lot of the same key concepts that you guys have been portraying throughout this conversation have been some of the key things that I've used in my teachings as well. So it's just it's nice to hear, you know, a lot of intelligent baseball talk, especially when there's so much downtime and it's tough to, you know, it's tough to stay sane, I would say, during a time like this.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of, you know, real enjoyment as well as just learning stuff by watching these old ball games on TV. And, there was even some – I'm halfway up to Red Sox country up here in Connecticut, so they play some of the old – but Red Sox games, and they just showed Roger Clemens in his warm-up pitches between innings. When's the last time they didn't go to commercial and you actually saw a guy take his warm-up pitches? But they would, you know, in today's televised game, there's the focus is on the torso and the face, and they dart back and forth between the manager, the pitcher, the hitter, you know, the umpire, the catcher's face mask. When in the old days, they used to just show everybody, and you could see what they were doing to get ready for the next pitch. And I thought it was great, you know, especially talking about pitching, too. You'd see that, you know, the sign being given, and you see the pitcher take a deep breath, go into his windup. You'd see the hitter talk to himself outside of the box, and the catcher's looking up at him. But, yeah, there's a lot of cool things to learn just from watching these games in this downtime.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt. If you could, we're trying to let these guys, if you could reiterate for us, we've been telling the kids, I know in the last couple of shows, but obviously we have them in the facility and stuff, about paying attention during a game and listening to the announcers, like what great stuff they teach. And you can learn so much from paying attention to the game. You see kids nowadays, they got the volume down and they're, you know, FaceTiming or talking or playing a video game, whatever the case is. And especially to me anyway, during the postseason, John Schmoltz is a guy, I should be his agent. I mean, I love that guy. Everything he says, I think is gospel. But there are so many good announcers out there, and they have so much, you know, because, again, a lot of guys nowadays are former players, so they have a lot of good knowledge.
What happened?
Matt, you there?
Guys like that. And, you know, you're right, and, you know, that was one of the benefits I had was, you know, a father that had played professionally and a grandfather, and to sit and watch a ball game with them was a lot of fun because it was always, hey, you know, I was a kid like anything else, distracted, wondering when lunch was or go to a ball game. I wanted, you know, some peanuts, but I'd get smacked on the shoulder and say, hey, look at the hitter wiggling his fingers in between pitches, you know. Look at the catcher, you know, getting up in his crouch a little bit higher with men on base. You know, watch the shortstop kind of moving his feet, getting ready for the pitch, all that kind of stuff that, you know, taught you so much. And like I said, some of the older broadcasts show you I always say, if you want to be a good ball player, watch the player. Don't watch the ball. Watch the player. So you watch the catcher get set up. Or you watch the pitchers follow through. Don't stay on the ball, but kind of see where he finishes. You know, little things like that. See, you know, watch the hitter get ready for the pitch. Don't watch the pitcher throw it, but watch the hitter, you know, get into his load and see if he keeps his head on the thing. Things like that, you know, you can really get a lot out of it. It's a great time to just think a little, retrain your brain a little bit, you know, and pick up some advantages that you can do kind of mentally and, you know, pay attention. Like you said, bottom line, pay attention.
Good stuff, Matt.
Thanks, Matt. And we have Travis, if you're there, I know you have a question for Matt. Very interested to hear it. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for your time. And I was just wondering if there were some, like, drills I could do during this time to help me with my pop time.
Yeah. Well, pop times is usually you improve it by speeding up the transfer from the from your mitt to your throwing hand and trying to, I don't want to say quicken your feet. It's hard to quicken your feet, but you shorten up your steps a little bit. So it's like working on a little bit of a dance step. It's easy to do in your basement and without necessarily trying to make a bunch of throws and taxing your arms. But getting into position to throw quicker is what's going to lower your pop time. So there's, I like to just, whether it's just, taking it, if it's a tennis ball or a baseball or something, and you're bouncing it off the wall, throwing it off the wall, but you're making a quick transfer from your mitt to your throwing hand. And I don't mean cranking your hand up to your ear, but just get it in your throwing hand, then take a step.
Yeah, that's good.
So there's little, but, I think the biggest thing is how quickly can you get the ball from the mitt into your throwing hand, get a good grip. And you can work on that without getting out and throwing balls down to second base, if that makes sense to you.
It does. Thank you very much.
Good, Travis. Good luck to you.
Matt, thank you. Matt, I know you're a partner and a director at a place called Batters Up in Guilford, Connecticut. Can you tell us a little bit about your facility and what type of work you're doing there?
Well, it's a 15,000 square foot facility that's got three different units side by side. They're long rectangular units. It was originally set up by the first owner put batting cages in, about four different batting cages in a tee area, and it was mainly for rental. And then a field side opened up where they turfed it, and we put netting all around this area. It's like a long rectangular area where the ceilings are very high, close to 30 feet. And I became a partner almost 2 years ago now, and we added space where we can simply just, we can get a lot of, we can do long toss, we can do sprints, we can work on all the skills. When I first saw the building as a former scout, I said, this is a place where not necessarily a team's going to get in there and be able to throw balls around in a small field, but every skill can be developed, sprinting and speed work, long distance throwing for arm strength, of course, hitting and pitching. And, it's just, we're lucky the original owner got a lot of nice equipment and a lot of nice, we got some four different hack attack machines. And it's just it's a place for rental. We don't have teams out of there. I do a lot of training and primarily run the place and make sure that the rental space is, a premium place for people to come in and train for both baseball and softball. So it's been a lot of fun. It's 10 minutes from my house, so I'm lucky to be doing what I love.
Matt, that's fantastic. When I was growing up, I didn't have much of that. My dad obviously didn't have any of that. He was being looked at by the Twins in his day. I grew up, you're slightly older than me, but not much. But we didn't have much of this type of indoor training. What type of advantage do you offer to those kids? I mean, do they have a better chance of succeeding in college because of your facility?
Oh, absolutely. And it's we've got all levels of players, and I've worked with softball players and young softball players, girls in college, boys in college, and a couple of my pro scout buddies have been down there looking at a couple kids. Nothing fancy, but it's like a gym for baseball and softball players. And you're preparing for, I try to get kids prepared for tryouts and get them prepared for showcases and try to use my scouting experience as well to say, hey, I've been on the other side of the clipboard and I have an idea what these guys are looking for. And, again, a lot of it goes back to body language and how you project yourself and carry yourself. But, it's all about skill work. It's all about repetition and you got to love it. I remember playing with Walt Weiss at North Carolina, and he was that guy that, you had to drag him off the field. Practice was over. You're still going to take another 35, 40 ground balls. And, you know, if the 25th ground ball took a bad hop and hit him in the chin or hit him in the collarbone, he still wanted to take 15 more. That's loving the game and, you know, doing – now's the time, like somebody said, you know, you'll see – you can make laps on somebody. You can advance. And it's what's that saying? What you do in the dark will come out in the light. You know, nobody's watching anybody doing anything. They're all on their own. But Johnny did a lot on his own. I know I did a lot on my own. I backed the cars out of my parents' garage and hitting that thing in the winter when it was freezing. It all pays off. It builds your confidence, too. It's just like studying for a test. And,
Matt,
you know, when the bell rings, you're going to be ready.
I was a fan of Walt Weiss, sure. I love the way he played. I get the commitment that he had. My son has a question for you. When you were hitting, a great question for a hitter. When you were hitting, to react to an off-speed pitch when you were sitting on a fastball at the major league level, what's that like, and what type of, I mean, how do you train for that?
Well, if you can't hit a fastball, you can't play. And you got to learn how to hit the fastball without cheating for the fastball. And what that means is you can't attack until the guy releases it from his fingertips. And if you can wait that long, and I don't mean don't move, but I mean you've got to see the guy let go of the pitch, and then you attack, and that's the race. You've got to get into a position to swing the bat with some force. You get back to having both feet on the ground before the ball gets to home plate. And when you're on time with the fastball and you're not trying to pull it, you find yourself landing in a balanced position if everything is on time. And there's a little split second where you're just – you've kept your hands back, as the old saying would be, but you don't think about keep your hands back. You're not cheating for the fastball is mainly what it is, and you're not trying to pull it. So you're trying to hit a – I always say, hey, we all want to try to hit home runs. It's not something new. Everybody would love to hit a home run. But try to hit it over the center field wall, not the left field wall or the right field wall. And when you do that, you find yourself without guessing hitting off-speed pitches that are over the plate and hittable. And what I mean by that is most hitters will not hit a good off-speed pitch that's out of the zone. They'll hit the one that's a strike above the knee or thigh high or belt high. And if you're not trying to, again, if you're not worried about the fastball getting by you or you're not trying to pull it and cheat and get out front, then you have a good chance of just – being able to hit an off-speed pitch that's hittable. And so I always felt like whether the count was 1-2, 0-2, 3-1, it's still I'm on the fastball. And I can remember being given a hit-and-run pitch, a hit-and-run sign at Fenway Park. It's kind of a funny story. It was against Roger Clemens, and I was playing for the Twins. I'm 30 years old, and Kirby Puckett's on first base and there's one out, and I come up and I get the hit and run sign on the first pitch, and it was a fork ball, but it was just high enough that I could stay on it. And I just, of course, it's hit and run, so I got to be on the fastball. I'm on everything. It's the first pitch too. And it was just a low fork ball, and I golfed it off the right center field wall for a double and an RBI. And it was pure reaction. So, you know, not the shortest answer, but hopefully it gives you a little bit of a vision of what I'm talking about.
It does, and it's the fact that you're even prepared for a 95-mile-per-hour fastball to begin with is a tremendous, tremendous testament. Hey, Pops, I know you're on the phone. Longtime Cubs fan, Minnesota Twin fan, the whole program. I know you have another question. Shoot, go right ahead.
Well, first of all, because of that, I'm glad I lived so long, at least to see the Cubs come out ahead, you know? But
yeah.
I guess everybody by now is walking around their house just looking to see which window they want to jump out of, right? I guess that's the case right now. But this is a great night talking about catches. I have a book that I think would be interesting for you guys, ladies, whoever's listening to read. It's called Pinstripes and Pennants. And a matter of fact, it's about Coach John's cousin, John Malangoni, back in the 60s, was a very good catcher. Actually, he was supposed to be the backup catcher to Yogi Berra. But a lot of things took a bad turn for him. And if you read this book, it's extremely interesting. I'm sure once you pick it up, you won't be able to put it down. So I just figured that being that we're on the subject of catches tonight, Matt, you enlightened me a lot with the answers you gave. They were fantastic. John jumping in there was terrific. It was like being out on the pitcher's mound meeting with you two guys. That's probably what it's like. But, I mean, if you do want to read something good.
I just listened.
Yeah, no, you don't have to say nothing. Your presence alone, John. But Pinstripes and Pennants, it's a good, interesting read. That's all I have to say.
That sounds good. I got one last little tip too for the coaches and for the managers out there and even for the pitchers. But the biggest thing that Rick Peterson helped me with controlling a staff, he said these guys are professional mitt hit. Their job is to hit the glove, to hit the mitt, to hit the target. And your job is to keep them focused on that. And Bobby Thigpen, one of the best closers in the game when I was playing, even still would get all emotional and all wrapped up and his mechanics would start falling apart. But the first thing I would address was the fact that I couldn't see his eyes before he started coming at me. You have to look where you're going before you put that thing in drive. You can't drive forward toward the plate without looking where your target is. And I would always, whether it was, different pitchers, but I would point to I would take my two fingers and I'd point to my eyes and my mask, like, look at me. I'm not seeing your eyes. And that will fix, your vision will help control your balance and it'll help control the tempo of your delivery. And it'll fix so many mechanics. And then the first thing you go to is this guy looking at the plate or is he drifting towards the plate and about to see where he's throwing it as his foot's coming down? Because that's no good. And you can talk all you want about mechanics, but not in a game. It needs to be, hey, what are you focused on? Are you focused on not being able to throw a pitch, not throwing hard enough, or are you focused on the target you're trying to hit? And that's, man, you get guys back on track in the middle of an at-bat. That's what it's all about.
Matt, that's a great point. And I know doing my private lessons, and I know up at the back complex, and yeah, I think on the radio a couple of times we even talked about this too. A lot of kids, they're still worried about the runner on base, so they're still staring at the guy second while they're lifting up their leg to go into the delivery. Or a lot of kids,
right,
too, I was seeing the mechanics a lot of time, whether it's wind up or the stretch, they want to see where they're lifting their leg to make sure they're not over rotating or whatever the case is. Like, but once that leg, you get to the height or even a little early, you got to start getting your head, because if you're not going to get your head to that target until that leg starts coming down, it's going to be too late. And it's just, like I said, it jerks you all over the place, and you definitely are not going to have the control that you want and or you need to get guys out. So that's a very important thing that you brought up.
And getting back to Joey's first question about, being on top of things and talking and being vocal, it's keeping the focus on the next pitch and hitting your target. And that's the toughest thing to do for any pitcher is, leave that last pitch behind or that last double behind, or he's walking back after backing up third base and now he's got to go to the mound. You can walk out halfway and say, hey, let's go, we're all right. But the folk, you can tell what he's focused on by what he's looking at. And keeping it simple in the heat of the moment, that's the hard part.
That's why catches are so important. Like you said, just that little thing pointing to your eyes. How many times have I had a catcher to me point to his left shoulder? In other words, telling me to stay closed, don't open up so much. Or just kind of giving you the halt sign, like, keep your weight back, rushing, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just those little tidbits sometimes, like you said, on the very next pitch, you're going to make the adjustment on the very next pitch, and the next pitch, maybe a double play gets you out of an inning.
Yeah. And another story I learned the hard way, I got traded to the Cleveland Indians, and the first game, I think it was like the second day I was there, Sandy Alomar got hurt, and I got called up from AAA real early in the season, and Dennis Martinez was a starting pitcher. And I'm doing my normal routine, but nobody told me about Dennis Martinez's routine. So I thought I'd go out there real early, much earlier than normal, and catch him in the bullpen before the game, obviously, like every guy would do. But by the time I got there, he already had another bullpen catcher down. And he looked up at me and he says, he won't let anybody change catchers as soon as the catcher goes down. So I went, oh, my God. So I had to stand like 10 feet off the side, watch him throw. Then I got 8 warm-ups before the game started to catch him for the first time in a major league game. Then I got yelled at by him in the second inning for not moving around the right way. And, you know, that's my fault. I should have gone to him and say, hey, what do I need to know about you today? You know, what do I need to do? For years I used to think, geez, somebody should have told me something. But, no, a good catcher will, you know, a good catcher will walk up to that pitcher that's starting that day and say, hey, how can I help you? And, you know, it's really what it is. It makes your life a lot easier. Because it's the pitcher, when the pitcher's on the field, he might not be the most important position in the whole field or the whole game. But I'm telling you, that guy on the mound runs the whole show as long as he's out there. And,
yeah, but Matt, you got the best seat in the house.
You got that right. Yeah, no, it's great.
Thank you very much, Matt, John. Thank you very much. Matt, before I let you go, I have another question from another player. I just want to say,
sure,
if any of our listeners are up in Connecticut, check out Batter Up Baseball Softball Training Facility. Contact.
Yeah, we got a little Instagram page. I've been putting some funny videos out there too, goofing around. I've been trying to give hitting lessons to our dummy hitters, the guys, you know, those little red guys you put in the batter's box for the pitchers, but they're not swinging the bat too much. No. But yeah, check out Batter Up CT. It's Batter Up CT. .com or Batter Up CT on Instagram. I've been posting some lighthearted, goofy videos. You know, like you said, catchers, we know how to keep it light.
Matt, that's fantastic. I believe catchers are the best.
What's the question? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but the question is,
which pitcher did you have the most trouble hitting against?
Mike Mussina. It didn't even
you
take
can say
long,
John Doherty,
right?
No one will ever know. I don't even know if I ever faced you.
I had been retired for a while. I must have been scouting, but I know I was home on a particular Sunday afternoon, and one of my neighbors, a big Yankee fan, came over and said, I just heard you, they're just talking about you on the Yankee game. I said, what are you, me? And they said, yeah, Mike Mussina got his 3,000th strikeout today. And they said, that goes all the way back to number one, Matt Marullo. So, and I
that's nasty.
And that was one guy I could never pick the ball up. But, you know, of course, I didn't play unless it was somebody of that caliber pitcher. So I'd sit the bench, and my other Forrest Gump moment was being in the lineup against Nolan Ryan and the Robin Ventura fight. That was funny.
Ooh. Where he basically put himself in a headlock, basically, and got punched in the face 5 times.
Yeah.
I used to love the hotel. How about the hotel, Matty? Right downstairs, right? When we used to walk right across the street at Arlington, the hotel, we stayed right there. And you walk into the gift shop, and they have pictures all over the place with a bloody Robin Ventura's face. He's in a headlock. Yeah. I mean, I was like, how does this guy even walk in the hotel every time? His teammates must abuse the hell out of him.
I saw recently online that there was a picture of Robin in the headlock, and it said the question was, who's the only player to get six hits off of Nolan Ryan in one inning? Good one. That's a good one.
What a beautiful What a beautiful lefty swing, though, right? Come on. What a beautiful lefty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was a good friend of mine, too. Beautiful swing. And I was good friends with him and Jack McDowell. And Jack, I always thought it was really cool that Jack McDowell was the guy that broke up his 57-game hitting streak in college. And then they became great friends with the White Sox. But that was a heck of an accomplishment too. What, you know, great amateur player as well as a, you know, real classy pro.
Let me just try to end this in this interview with something a little controversial. Not to you. I just want to bring it up in terms of what the Houston Astros went through and what the Red Sox just went through. I think today they came down with some levies in terms of stealing signs and things like that. Now, in my day of playing, in your day of playing, we always tried to get that advantage. Have you ever seen anything like this in terms of new technology to steal signs?
Well, that was one of the most harrowing things as a catcher for me was the different sets of signs and the different pitchers that had different sets of signs and different guys that had different levels of anxiety about being stolen. But there was a craftsmanship to it all there. This is just kind of flat out, you know, like I said, it was a culture that was created that really wasn't, you know, it was went beyond the unwritten rules of the game, and you know, that's it. So it's unfortunate. I'm glad that it got exposed, and you know, it's sad, but you know, baseball will survive. And but I you know, technology is a lot different than you know, having the skill to really pay attention to actions and mannerisms and twitches and glitches and grips and, you know, all those little things. That's a skill. But just turning on a television and putting one in the dugout, and, you know, that's too easy.
Just shows how hard it actually is to hit a baseball, right? So anybody will do what they got to do to get an advantage.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. No, everybody will do what they got to do, and it's, you know, who's the guy that draws the line? And you know, it's so. You know, I'm not the one to pass judgment, but it, you know, I'm glad it all got exposed. It's something that's got to go. It's just got to go through the system and get flushed out. That's all. Take care of it.
Yeah. Here's a question about competitiveness, and you know, we're a show talking sports, not necessarily baseball or Silverback baseball. You know, I've been following. I'm a Dolphin fan for football, but I really admire the way Tom Brady plays. And I've been following him exiting the Patriots and going to Tampa Bay. And today we find out that Gronkowski is going to join him out of retirement. And from a professional perspective, are there certain things that would get you to give up that thought of retirement for one more shot at something? I mean, what is it? What is your thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Johnny. I'm done.
I know that question is not really for us
I
now, but I mean, going back
to the pitcher.
I mean, I think, you know, with today's salaries and stuff, I think guys have enough money. I think, you know, I think he misses the game. And it's so funny because I said it to my son. We were working out in the garage. And I said to him, I said, I wouldn't be surprised. I swear, I said this literally hours before it happened. And sure enough, he texted me. He couldn't believe it. Like, I knew something inside or information. But, you know, again, I think just the idea of him missing the game, but also wanting to help him, his friend, you know, possibly, you know, win another championship maybe, you know. I mean, I think that's what drives the professional athletes. I mean, you know, everybody always hears about the money. I mean, you know, I think at one point you're making so much money, it's not the money that drives you so much. It's always about winning championships and winning a ring and to say to you a champion, and because that's forever. You're a champion forever.
Yeah.
But Manny, you know, and I are going, Manny and I aren't going anywhere for anything, and nobody wants us,
no.
I promise you that.
But, you know, also from a player's perspective, too, there's, you know, it happens a lot in free agency. You wonder why certain players don't go to certain markets. And a lot of times it has to do with personal reasons that don't really come out. And it's just, you know, some players are more comfortable in Kansas City than they are in New York. We've all heard that before. But, you know, when I was with the White Sox, we had a hitting coach that was a really, you know, he was a tough, stern guy, and it was kind of the no-fun zone in the batting cage. And we worked hard, but at times there was a balance that got to a point where, you know, you need to back off and have a little fun. There'd be other players that come from other organizations and be like, man, we used to just take around BP and try to hit the grounds crew guy in the cart down the left field line on one round, you know. And so there's a culture sometimes too that, you know, players might be ready for another scene, you know, and that's not knocking anything. You just don't know. But I saw the news. I was like, man, you know, good for them. I bet they're going to go have a lot of fun, you know. And in the end, doesn't really matter what uniform you're wearing. You're playing for your teammates, but you're still playing.
That's the biggest thing about it. I think anybody that's played or is playing, used to play, whatever. I mean, what you always love the most is competing, and then just the camaraderie ship. I mean, you know, again, looking at some of my videos, looking at some of the press things the last couple of days, the news clippings, and you just giggle because it brings back different memories, different stories. And I wound up catching notice of myself this past week. I wound up calling probably 7-8 different guys that I've played with just to kind of catch up, see how they're doing during this time, how their families are. And I have a whole nother list of like another 15 guys that I want to call up, because it's just, you know, life goes by so fast and you just don't, you know, especially some of my coaches. I spoke to Gene Roof the other day, who was my double-A pitching coach, double-A manager. And we wound up going to the major leagues together. He was the third base coach and first base coach, I'm sorry. And obviously I was pitching. And, you know, so we were together, you know, for our time in the big leagues together. And you know, just to let him know that I appreciated everything he did for me, and that, it didn't go unnoticed, basically.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was on the phone with my old teammate, Danny Pasqua, for almost 2 hours the other day, and we hadn't talked to each other in a few years. But if there's ever time to connect, I mean, you know, what's everybody doing? Hanging out. So it's a great time to reach out. That's awesome to hear, Johnny.
Yeah, this has been tremendous, Matt. John, thank you. I remember about 7 years ago, now I'm 43, so I was 36. I was still pitching in New Jersey in tournaments, and I went up against a team out there, and I remember this third base coach was in my head, and he's one of those coaches that wouldn't stop talking, clapping nonstop, the batter, look for the in, this, that, out, in, up, and down, and he always seemed to know what I was throwing, and I'm looking over at him, and I'm thinking, you know, at this point in my life, I'm like, I think I'm really good, and he's pissing me off. And I had no idea who he was, but he was just an irritating human. And after the game, he went out to the mound. He was in his 70s. He went out to the mound. We had a doubleheader. So after the first game, he goes out to the mound, and he starts pitching to his catcher. He's probably throwing in the 70s, and he's 70-something years old. And I went out to the field, and he came over to me, and he said, "You're John Robinson, right? Sylvia's son." And I looked at him and I said, "What? How do you know that?" And he said, "I'm John Malangoni. I'm your mom's cousin. I played for this," and the whole Yankee thing, the whole thing. And I'm thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. This guy, his hands were like mitts. Okay? So, I mean, you got to understand that, like, to have that strength, that inner strength, to go to that level of pro where things are easier about a higher level, you can see how they're made up as a human. This guy was throwing in his 70s, the catcher. He was throwing in his 70s when he's in his 70s.
Pinstripes and Penance, guys. Read the book.
I understand Pinstripes and Penance, but this guy went to Florida and threw double headers while he's 75 years old. And here he is coaching teams.
Another lesson I learned when I was 15 years old, and I was playing for a semi-pro team that my father had organized, and he had got the uniforms. They were hand-me-down uniforms from the Cubs Double A team, San Antonio Missions. And I was big for my age. By then, I was about 170 pounds or so, and we go play the New Rochelle Robins one day. And there's a guy behind the plate who's 50 years old at the time named Nick Testa. And he had been a coach of my father's, and he was still throwing BP for the Yankees at the time. And My father, I was sitting on the bench in the middle of this hot game, you know, some weekend, whatever it was. I'm 15 years old, and my father smacks me on the shoulder, and he says, "You see that guy right there?" And he's pointing at Testa, sprinting past our bench down the first baseline to back up a throw. And he's talking about how much more he's hustling at 50 than I was at 15. Pointing out, look at him back up the throw down the first baseline. Watch him sprint. And I can still remember that today. You know, you got to admire that passion and that work ethic goes a long way. And it sticks with you. It sticks with you. You know, when you see somebody like you're talking about right there, John, that's a good story.
Matt, the Robins, I played them. I played the Pelham Mets to actually make a college team for Pace University.
Yeah, Joe Salamini. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you had a tremendous, tremendous baseball career, and I encourage everyone to check out batterupct.com. Contact Matt. You love catching. I mean, contact Matt. And Matt, I hope Silverbacks baseball can invite you back to our facility as much as we can. We'd love to have you around.
Thanks a lot. No, it's a pleasure. And this is a great idea. I'd love to talk to you, John, and do it for some of my people back here in Connecticut. This is a great little hot stove conversation, even though it's April.
Thank you, Matt, very much.
I really appreciate you. I'm sorry, John. You'll finish up, John. Matt, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your time and effort there, buddy. I really do. Miss you. I'll see you along the way soon somewhere. And, again, thanks for your time. I owe you, buddy.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Enjoy
thank you, John.
Thank you very
and
much.
Thank you to our captors, Anthony Fava, for joining us, and all of our catching kids, Travis, Joey, and Joey. We love you guys. And working hard, it'll get you somewhere. You know, you heard from the major leaguers what it takes. And, you know, keep doing what you do. Keep training. And we're here for you at Silverbacks Nation. Next episode, next Wednesday. Look out for more information from Silverbacks Baseball from Mike Van Riper. We're looking to do some more stuff on middle of May. May have some big news. In the meantime, we got the show, PS4, and we have You Hit. So we're going to have some training videos. Stay with us because we're with you. And Silverbacks Nation, see you next time.